Told, they've always been a part of Avalon. Nasty, life-sucking things. But pretty much the only life you find around here now. Hell, these days, even the Darklings are starting to fade. With all the wee folk gone, they only got each other to eat. Nick saw another one duck away into the hollow of a log. It looked like a spider, but was the size of a cat. Jeez, Nick thought, and made a mental note to steer clear of any hollow logs or stumps. They passed a clump of dead bushes, then rounded a bend, and a shallow valley opened below them where brown foliage sparsely littered the trees. As they trekked along the trail, the landscape gradually began to shift and the trees and bushes to fill in. But it wasn't until after about an hour of hiking that Nick finally caught sight of any real greenery. They forded a wide, lazy creek, crossed a field of tall brown grass dotted with a few wilted wildflowers, and shortly thereafter entered a forest of thick, sprawling trees. "This is Mirkviewer Forest," Redbone said. "It's the oldest woods on Avalon, the very heart of the island. Its magic is strong, but man, look at that." Redbone pointed at the scraggly limbs and gray and brown leafage. "Man, even here the damn scourge is choking the life out of everything." Nick found no signs of magical creatures and only heard the occasional lonely bird call. The troop halted while Sikiu and Abraham inspected a line of prickly bushes, poking and prodding among the brown leaves. "Find anything?" Abraham asked. Sikiu held out two shriveled berries. "Now that be a pitiful sight," Abraham said, shaking his head. The group moved along, farther and farther into the tall trees, checking one cluster of bushes, then another. A couple of hours later, they halted beneath a grove of short trees. Redbone pulled a limb down for Sikiu to pluck a couple of berries. She dropped them into Abraham's bucket. Abraham looked into the bucket. "Well, now we're getting somewhere. Well, that makes 8 berries and about 20 acorns so far." "Enough for my breakfast," Redbone said. "Don't know what the rest of you jive turkeys are going to do for grub." Abraham let out a long, defeated sigh. "Once you could have filled all our buckets up from just this one bush here. If this keeps up, we'll be eating thorns, sure enough."
"What the fuck?" Dirk said. "Last week there were plenty of berries here."
"Shit," Redbone said. "It's like it's going faster. Every time we have to search farther and farther into the forest. Man, what are we going to do when we run out of forest?"
"Enough talk," Sikiu said sharply, her face tight.
She walked quickly away, continuing down the trail. The rest of the devils exchanged somber looks and followed. A small deer broke cover. It was thin and mangy. It leaped across a wide, shallow creek, up a slope, and disappeared into the brambles. Redbone snatched Danny's spear away from him and started after the deer.
"No!"
Sikiu shouted. Redbone ignored her.
"The lady's wood!" she cried.
Redbone stopped. He looked up and down the creek, his face confused.
"Oh, good Lord," Abraham said, his voice incredulous. "She's right. That's Cusith Creek. I didn't even recognize it. Not with all them leaves and flowers gone."
"Impossible," Dirk said. "The scourge in the lady's wood?"
"If we don't bring something back, we're gonna starve," Redbone growled.
"I say we go after it."
"You go," Abraham said. "I'm in no mind to throw my life away for a spot of venison."
Redbone stared after the deer.
"The elves will kill you," Sikiu stated with certainty. "The trees have eyes and ears."
She pointed to 3 bird-sized fairies, watching them from a high branch. They followed the dark creek downstream, stopping occasionally to examine the bushes along the banks. The sun never came out from behind the clouds, but the day had grown warm and humid.
"Hey,"
Danny huffed, wiping the sweat from his brow. His face was bright red, his t-shirt soaked.
"Any chance of a break?"
Sikiyu kept plodding onward, her eyes relentlessly searching the bushes and underbrush.
"You know," Abraham said, "break might not be such a bad idea. Be a mite awkward if we were to kill the new blood on the first day out."
Sikiyu stopped, took a hard look at Danny, then scanned the surrounding tree line.
"Rest here. I will go check Oak Grove. Dirk, come."
Nick collapsed atop a large flat stone next to the shallow creek and watched Sikiyu and Dirk disappear into the woods. He let out a tired sigh and joined the rest of them in dousing his head and getting a long drink. The sweetness of the water still amazed him.
"Can't believe the scourge has spread to the lady's wood," Redbone said. "Man, I would have never dreamed that possible."
"Seems to me it's accelerating," Abraham said. "I do wonder if Peter has any idea."
"You know," Dash said, "Peter should have been back by now."
"Just hope he ain't got himself in a spot he can't get out of," Abraham said.
"There's no such thing as trouble that dude can't get out of," Redbone said.
"I just hope he brings some more Snickers," Dash said.
"Man, there ain't much I miss about the world," Redbone said. "But I gotta say, I sure miss the food. Remember that time Peter brought back 6 boxes of Ray's pizza?"
"Do I ever," Abraham said, and a big smile lit up his face.
"Why, I dream about that most every night."
Danny's eyes grew big.
"Pizza! Wow, that'd make my decade."
"Don't tell me you're getting tired of acorns and mushrooms already," Redbone said and nudged Danny. "Man, you gotta wait till you've been here as long as me before you start griping about the food."
"So where is Peter?" Nick asked.
"Catching kids," Redbone said with a laugh.
Nick couldn't believe they were laughing.
"That's funny."
Redbone's smile faded.
"It's not right," Nick muttered, half under his breath.
"What's not right?"
Nick didn't answer, he just shook his head.
"I said, what's not right?"
"What do you think?" Nick said.
"The bastard kidnapping kids. That's what's not right."
Redbone struck Nick. He moved so quickly, Nick didn't even see it coming. Hit him in the chest, knocking him into the creek. Abraham was up and between them in a blink, holding Redbone back.
"Whoa, he's back now. Let it go. He's new blood, remember?"
Redbone glared at Nick, then glanced around at the other new blood.
"Let's get one thing straight. I don't want to catch any of you bad-mouthing the man. That jive don't fly with me."
He walked over to Nick, grabbed him by the collar, and pulled him up out of the creek. He propped Nick back up on the rock, then plopped down across from him, leaning forward and locking his crazy eyes on him.
"You need to understand a thing or two," Redbone said. "So I'm gonna lay it on you. Back before I came here, I lived upstate with my old man. Got tired of the sorry fuck beating the snot out of me every other day. So I upped and lit out for the big city. In less than a week, I was sleeping in a cardboard box, stealing, and turning tricks just to eat. You've any idea how bad that is? I had to do things I can't even talk about still. I was 13. Fucking 13! One night this pimp gets a hold of me. Bastard tells me if I want to work his street, I gotta pay."
"Pay? With what?"
"I didn't have enough dough to buy food. How was I supposed to pay this hustler? So I don't. Sure enough, he catches up with me and beats the crap out of me. I mean, really beats the crap out of me. Left me in a dumpster, spitting up blood. Man, at that point, I wanted to die. Week later, I'm back at it because that's all I got, see? Only now, no one wants anything to do with me. You know why?"
Redbone's eyes bore into Nick.
because I got this gnarly scab on my mouth and I was all scraped up from the beating. So I'm mostly stealing shit and eating out of garbage cans. He caught me on his turf again. I wasn't getting any action. I was just there, you know? Made no difference to this motherfucker. He drugged me into an alley, stuffed garbage in my mouth so no one could hear me screaming, and pulled out his knife. Says he's gonna fix me for good, and gives me this. Redbone traced the scar running down his face. Would have killed me. But that's when Peter showed up. You know, the guy you were just bad-mouthing? Before that asshole even knew what was happening, Peter cut him wide open. Laid him out. That's one son bitch that'll never hurt another kid. Ever. Peter doctored me up the best he could and brought me back with him. So let me lay it on you straight. I love that pointy-eared dude. He did more than save my life. He gave me a life. Gave me a family. I know what I'm about, cause it's all real simple here. We're clan. We're devils, and we look after one another.
Abraham and Dash nodded along.
And if you think my story's bad, Redbone continued, man, you ain't heard shit. Get Abraham to tell you what it was like to be a runaway slave sometime. Ask him about the life Peter saved him from. Hell, ask any of them kids back at the fort. Every one of them got a hard luck story that'd bring tears to your eyes. Plenty a lot worse than mine. And there's not a single one of them that wants to go back, because we've all had our share of dealing with fucked up parents, step-parents, priests, cops, pimps, pushers, crackheads, all those fuckers out there. That world out there, I say they can keep it, man. Peter's given us another chance. That cat has put his life on the line for me, for you, and for every kid here, time and again. The sooner you get your mind right about that, the better off you'll be. Are we straight on that?
No, Nick thought. We're not. But he nodded anyway.
Good, Redbone said. Because I like you, and I'd hate to have to kill you.
Nick wasn't sure if Redbone was kidding, was pretty sure he wasn't, pretty sure this kid would kill him if Peter asked him to, and judging from what he had seen back at the fort, probably any of them would. He glanced at Abraham, Dash, Leroy, even Cricket and Danny. He could see it in all their eyes. They were completely taken in by Peter's ruse. It was as though Peter was some sort of messiah to them, come to take them to the promised land.
This is a magical place, Abraham said, addressing all the new blood. You wouldn't know it, not by the way things are now. But when I first came here, these forests were lush, teeming with life. Every kind of fruits and nuts you could imagine. Why, there were wild bananas hanging off the trees. A true paradise.
And it'll be again, Redbone stated with absolute conviction. That's where we come in. Where you come in. Together we're gonna drive away the flesh eaters. And then,
his eyes glimmered,
then we'll be the lords of Avalon.
Flesh eaters? Cricket asked. Redbone hesitated, cut his eyes to Abraham.
Tell us, Cricket prodded.
Yeah, well, Redbone muttered. Let's just say they're the ones causing all this trouble, and leave it at that.
What are they?
Cricket persisted.
Hush up now, Abraham said. Here comes Sikiyu. She's in a foul enough mood already. She'll scalp the lot of us if she hears us talking to new blood about flesh eaters. Peter would tell you. Let you in on everything soon enough.
Why can't we talk about these flesh eaters? Nick wondered. What are they hiding? Nick thought about asking Sikiyu, then saw her face and decided now wasn't the time. Sikiyu held out her hand. Four gray acorns.
That there's from Oak Grove? Abraham asked.
She nodded.
What are we gonna do?
I say we slip across the creek, Redbone said. Make a quick raid into the lady's wood.
Abraham looked at him as though he'd lost his mind. You do have a death wish.
The elves are too vigilant, Sikiyu said.
Well, that leaves the witch's swamp, Redbone said. They all fell quiet.
Well? Abraham asked, looking at Sikiyu.
Sikiyu shook her head.
What other choice do we have?
They followed the creek downstream until the land began to level out. The water turned brown and led into a marsh of high gray reeds. The reeds gave way to squat, twisted trees with slick, black, oily bark, their branches dripping with thick moss. The path became soggy, then muddy, grabbing at their feet. The trees pressed in around them as the path wove around weedy bogs and stagnant ponds. Nick didn't like it. Other than an occasional bellow, the swamp was still and silent, the air musty and stifling. Even Redbone had fallen deathly quiet, all of them creeping along, weapons out, keeping a tight watch on the trees and murky pools. Nick felt as though he was in a sideshow spook house, knowing something would pop out at any second. He was worn out, his feet sore, and the dread was wearing on his nerves. He decided he'd had all the adventuring he needed for one day, and found himself actually longing to be back at the fort. A cry came from behind, and Nick spun about in time to see Danny sliding down a short embankment and into a pool of black, viscous mud.
Help!
Danny cried as he clawed at the slippery bank. The mud bubbled up around him. It was up to his waist in no time and appeared to be pulling him down. Redbone leaped over, grabbed a root in one hand, and snatched a hold of Danny's wrist with the other. Dash and Dirk were there in a second, and it took all three of them to finally pull Danny out.
Hey, Danny, Redbone said. Next time you decide to drown yourself, try not to make so much noise, okay?
Danny looked like he was about to cry. He'd lost both his boots and was covered from the neck down in stringy, oily mud. The mud gurgled loudly behind him, and he scurried away from the bank.
Maybe we should take them back, Abraham said to Sikiyu. There, Sikiyu said, and pointed to a cluster of spotted mushrooms growing beneath a thick, thorny hedge.
Few more over here, Dash said. We should spread out. Might just find enough.
Sikiyu nodded in agreement. She pointed at Nick and the other new blood.
You four look here. Abraham, stay with them. The rest of you spread out. But keep in sight. We must be quick. She will find us if we linger.
Ouch,
Nick said and stuck his finger in his mouth. That was about the 100th time he'd been pricked so far. The only mushrooms they'd found were growing beneath the thorn bushes. Nick guessed these were the ones the deer couldn't get to.
Me too,
Cricket said. She held up the back of her hand. She was a couple bushes down the slope, but Nick had no problem seeing the scratches. Danny actually looked like he was enjoying himself for the first time all day. He was on all fours, knocking at a mushroom with his spear.
It's kind of like hunting Easter eggs, Danny said. Don't you think?
Just shut up and keep picking, Leroy said.
Abraham came over to Leroy and dropped a handful of mushrooms into his sack.
We do need to hurry, Abraham said, looking worriedly up the hill.
The fog's getting up.
Nick glanced up the hill and could just make out the shape of Sikiyu and Redbone digging around on the ridgeline. Something splashed nearby. Abraham heard it too. The fog was indeed getting thicker. At first, Nick thought he was just imagining things. Then a wave of fog drifted into the clearing and all but obscured Danny.
No, sir, this ain't right at all, Abraham said. We need to get... I'll fetch Sikiyu. Now don't any of you go nowhere.
He sprinted away up the hill. The fog continued to roll in.
Nobody told you to stop,
Leroy said.
Can you see them? Cricket asked.
Not anymore, Nick said.
Got it,
Danny said, holding up a big yellow mushroom. Man, would you look at the size of this thing? Shit, I can't see a thing, Cricket said.
I said get back to work, Leroy growled.
A small break opened in the fog. Nick spotted Abraham nearing the ridge. Then the hair shot up on the back of his neck. Behind Abraham were four, maybe five, hunched shapes right on his heels, and whatever they weren't human. Nick was in mid-shout when a horrible screech cut him off. It was Danny. He was on the ground, and on top of him was a monster. It had red fur, was no larger than a cat, and reminded Nick of a hyena, but with long arms and clawed fingers that were even now digging into Danny's arm and shoulder. It whipped about a long tail with a wet red stinger protruding from the end, and it began slamming the stinger repeatedly into Danny's neck and face.
Oh, shit!
Nick cried. His sack fell from his hand, sending the handful of mushrooms tumbling down the slope. Danny's face went bright red. His mouth opened wide as he gasped loudly for breath. He toppled over backward, twitched violently, then lay still, his eyes staring up at nothing. Another hyena thing dropped from the tree above Cricket, knocking the spear from her hand. This one was much larger, closer to the size of a German shepherd, a thick mane of black fur circling its head. It, too, had a whipped tail, but this one lacked any sort of stinger that Nick could see. Cricket screamed and swung wildly with her bucket, driving it back. She tried to get around it, but it kept her pinned between the thorn bushes, hissing and snapping its teeth. Leroy, not five strides away from her, seemed frozen in place, his eyes big, his mouth agape, clutching his spear between his white-knuckled fists.
Help her!
Nick shouted, but Leroy only continued to stare. Cricket hit the monster with the pail. It jigged side to side, darting to and fro. Nick saw the smaller, red-haired creature creeping up from behind her. If somebody didn't do something now, Cricket would be as dead as Danny. Leroy stumbled backward and fell. Nick rushed out from the bushes, not even feeling the thorns dig into his legs, not thinking about anything but driving those monsters away from Cricket. He snatched up his spear and rushed the beasts, leaping past Leroy as Leroy scrambled up the hill on all fours. The red creature leaped on Cricket's back and jabbed its stinger into her neck, over and over. Cricket let out a pitiful cry and tumbled over.
No!
Nick screamed and slammed the spear into the red creature's ribs, knocking it off Cricket and driving it into the dirt. The red creature shrieked and thrashed, black blood spewing from the wound. The black hyena thing let loose a howl that almost caused Nick to drop his spear. The wail sounded human, sounded full of rage and anguish. Nick yanked his spear free and leveled it at the hyena thing. The monster locked eyes with Nick and began to beat the ground in front of it. It bared its fangs and tore up clumps of dirt and leaves, slinging them into the air. It means to tear me apart, Nick thought, and wanted to run, but knew if he turned his back even for a second, the creature would have him. His heart thundered in his chest. This is beyond me. I can't do this. But there was a new voice in his head, Sekiyu, telling him to hold steady, to focus. Nick slid into the L stance, fixed his trembling hands on the spear. One shot, he thought. That's all I'm gonna get. The hyena thing let loose an ear-splitting screech and came for him, ripping across the ground in a crazy zigzagging charge, hooting and howling. Focus, Nick thought, taking quick, short breaths, fighting to hold steady. The monster leaped and Nick swung, putting a snap on the spear just as Sekiyu had showed him. The blade caught the beast in the neck, cutting its throat wide open. The creature slammed into Nick, spattering him in black blood and knocking him to the ground. Nick shoved the convulsing body away and tried for his feet, but before he could get up, something landed on his back. The smaller red creature, its claws sunk into his shoulder, its stinger whipping toward his face. Nick managed to get his arm up and the stinger ripped across his forearm. Nick cried out as searing pain shot up his arm. He twisted free and kicked away from the beast. It twitched and clawed at the dirt, but didn't get back up. Nick clasped his wounded arm to his chest. He could feel the burning spread up his shoulder. His face began to grow warm, then hot. His throat tightened. Nick dropped his spear and fell over on his back, gasping for breath as his throat continued to constrict. He caught a glimpse of Cricket. She was pale and still, her eyes lifeless. The red beast lay on its side, twitching. Leroy, his face a mask of fear and revulsion, rushed up and slammed his spear into the monster's body over and over, and kept repeating,
"Oh shit! Oh shit! Oh shit!"
"They are here!" Sikiyu shouted, running out of the fog, taking in the scene in a glance and sliding down next to Cricket. She leaned over, putting an ear against the girl's chest. Abraham, Dirk, Dash, and Redbone came running up. Redbone was splattered in black blood. A nasty slash ran across his shoulder and chest, his breath coming hard and fast through clenched teeth, sword in one hand, knife in the other, both dripping with blood. He locked wild, fierce eyes on the two dead creatures.
"I killed them," Leroy said quickly. "Killed both of them."
He looked at Cricket and Danny.
"I tried to save them. Things just happened so fast. I did what I could."
Redbone met Leroy's eyes, his mouth a grim line. He slipped away his knife, clapped a bloody hand on Leroy's shoulder, and shook the boy.
"Those are Barghest, man! Right on, Leroy!"
Leroy grinned weakly and cut his eyes to Nick.
"What?"
Nick thought.
"No!"
he tried to shout, but his throat was too tight, and he broke into a fit of painful coughing. A howl cut through the fog. It came from everywhere, from the very ground. The fog itself began to darken like a storm cloud.
"The witch," Sikiyu said.
Chapter 12. Lady Modron's Garden. Peter stared at the bodies. In the soft glow of dawn, he could see that the earth was still dark from their slaughter. There were four of them, Pooksits, distant cousins to the centaur, only much smaller, coming no higher than Peter's knee. They had the bodies of cats and the torsos of monkeys. They'd always reminded Peter of little people with their dexterous fingers, chattery speech, and lively expressive faces. He could see where the flesh-eaters had burned them out of the nearby brush. There were slashes in the dirt of a struggle, and tracks where they'd been dragged over to be skinned and butchered. Their bones lay scattered about the dirt. Peter couldn't help but notice the teeth marks on the bones. He found their heads and hands in a ditch, tossed aside like garbage. Their eyes, glazed and jellied, stared up at him, the horror of their deaths still plain to see. Peter had heard the screams of those caught by the flesh-eaters. Be they elf, centaur, gnome, troll, fairy folk, or even devil, it didn't matter. The flesh-eaters showed no mercy. They skinned them alive, butchered, and ate them. Better to die by my own hand, Peter thought, than ever fall into theirs. Other than a slight tightening of the jaw, Peter showed no emotion. He turned and pressed on, heading north. The flesh-eater's path of raised, brutalized land spread out before him as far as he could see. He skirted the remnants of a village, the burned-out huts jutting up from the dead ashen earth like so many jagged teeth. A stack of broken skulls were piled against one wall. Their hollow eyes followed him as he passed.
It is time to end this, Peter thought. One way or another, it must end.
He glanced heavenward. Somewhere above the low-lying clouds, the sun lit up the sky. He could tell the day was going to be warm, could feel the humidity building. He scanned the gray mud and burned husks of long fallen trees and wondered if the sun's face would ever grace this tortured landscape again. Peter crested a long sloping hill, found himself staring into the eyes of a god, and realized where he was.
Avalok's shrine,
he said, and dropped heavily onto a boulder. He gazed at the broken ruins. He could see the marshlands below. Deviltree wasn't far now, just past the swamps, but he wasn't looking forward to crossing through the witch's land. Not during the day.
Not while I still have my eyes,
he thought, and grinned a nasty grin. He regarded the god's head, a giant thing of carved granite easily the size of a barrel. It had been knocked from its base at the neck and lay on its side as though listening to the earth. Its face was marred, hacked and hammered, but even so the eyes still held their strength. The rest of the great statue still stood, its hands forever clasped to its chest. A ring of craggy stumps spiraled out from the statue, all that remained of the vast apple orchard. When Peter closed his eyes, he could still see those trees, hundreds of them, their white blossoms flittering in the warm sunlight of that faraway day. Peter sat beside the old elf upon a large field stone. He cupped a hand across his brow, shielding his eyes from the midday sun as he looked up at the giant statue. The statue's eyes were set deep within the shadow of its thick furrowed brow, staring ceaselessly out over the orchard. Apple blossoms drifted lazily by, glittering in the sunlight, gathering in every crease and fold of the statue's drapery. The apple trees surrounding the statue hummed and buzzed with honeybees, birds, and the ceaseless chatter of sprites and fairies. Peter followed the lady's every move, found he cared to do little more. She stood before the statue, a slender hand resting upon its foot, looking up into the stern face.
That's Avalok, the old elf said. God of healing, Lord of Avalon. He's left us, his mortal time on earth long past. He now reigns in Otherworld, leaving his children to watch over Avalon.
Uh-huh,
Peter said distractedly.
The Lady Modron is one of his children.
The lady?
Yes.
Did her mother leave her too?
Mother? I don't believe the lady had a mother. Not in the way we might think of, anyway. Avalok created his children from the elements at hand. The lady's spirit comes from the rivers, lakes, and streams. Water will forever be her lifeblood. Her brother, the Horned One, was created from living sacrifices of flesh and blood, while her sister, Ginny, the witch, was grown from the earth like a tree.
Peter glanced over at him, concerned.
The witch is her sister? How can that be? The witch is so wicked.
The elf laughed.
They're gods, he said,
as though that explained everything. Peter looked puzzled.
They're nature, and one must always be wary of nature. They play their roles, keeping the balance of Avalon. None of them would flinch at killing any who should threaten that balance. Why, even the children of Faerie are not immune from their ire. The Horned One will smite any who enter Avalon uninvited. The witch, well, you're well aware of what the witch does to outsiders. The lady guards us all with her mist. Even among the she, only a very few can walk the mist.
Peter watched the lady lay her cheek against the stone and close her eyes.
I like the lady very much.
Yes,
the elf sighed.
She is hard not to love. She is like the earth itself. But, he lowered his voice, one must always be wary of gods and goddesses, lest we become too entangled in their desires and schemes.
The elf fell quiet for a while.
Did you know that the whole world was once fairy?
Peter shook his head, half listening.
Yes, indeed. Before mankind came along.
The elf's voice sobered.
Men have disturbed the balance, putting the children of Avalok to the test. All we have left now is this island. The new gods are pushing out the old. Soon, I fear, there'll no longer be room for Earth's first children. Anywhere. That is why the lady comes here. To seek her father's counsel. Whether he hears or not, none of us know. Judging from her face, I don't believe he does. But that's the business of the gods. My business is to keep the lady safe.
Safe?
Peter glanced up at the elf.
From what? The witch?
No. I don't believe the witch would harm her, or even could. They might not like each other, but they need each other. The way the land needs water and water needs land. But there are others that would.
Peter looked concerned.
The lady's spirit is immortal, but she is not. There are those, even in faerie, that would feed on her flesh. If her mortal form were to pass, she'd no longer be bound to the earth, to Avalon. Then where would we be? But that won't happen, not while I'm part of the guard,
the elf stated with obvious pride.
It's my duty to see to it. She comes and goes without fear of beast or witch or little red-headed freckle-faced boys.
He smiled. Peter leaped to his feet.
Can I join the lady's guard?
He thumped his chest.
I'd make a great guard. Why, I'm not afraid of that witch, or wolves, or bears, not anything.
The guard laughed and patted Peter on the head.
Maybe one day.
We're here, Peter Bird,
the Lady Modron said.
My garden.
It had been a long trek from the statue to the garden. They'd passed through forests and glades, crossed creeks and streams, but to Peter it had seemed no time at all as he walked beside the lady, as she told him about all the sights and creatures they came upon. The sun edged toward the horizon, painting the sky and surrounding forest a brilliant gold. The trees about the garden were tall and straight, with pale blue bark and leaves. They proceeded up a walkway of alabaster flagstones, framed by two long, slender wading pools. Tall standing stones stood sentinel in their still waters. The walkway led to a lofty archway cut into a towering white stone ledge. White bands of gold veined the stone, glittered in the waning sunlight, sending dazzling beams sparkling off the long pools. A gentle waterfall spilled onto the crest of the archway, dividing the waterfall into twin falls that cascaded down either side, forming the head of each pool. A field of wildflowers spilled over the banks of the pools, filling the air with the sweet perfume of nectar and evening dew. Wild fairies and sprites perched upon every reed, lily, and stem, some even straddling the backs of bored-looking bullfrogs. They filled the dusk with their song as they watched the lady pass. The lady and her procession approached the archway, and two young elves pulled the tall doors open. The boys bowed to the lady, giving Peter curious looks as he passed. They entered a short passageway of polished, iridescent stone, the palest shade of green. The walls were framed by stone pillars in the shape of trees that looked to have grown right from the floor, their branches weaving into a spidery canopy. Music drifted along the corridor, accompanied by raucous laughter, squeals, and grunts. Peter glanced down the hall and saw a tall, handsome boy with a heavy brow and dark, brooding eyes striding purposely toward them.
Someone does not look pleased, my lady,
Drail whispered. The lady sighed.
Whenever does he?
The boy was much taller than Peter, eye level with the lady. Peter guessed him to be several years older than himself. His dark hair was cropped in a bowl cut just above his ears, oiled and shiny, not a strand out of place. He wore a quilted jacket trimmed in gold, with long puffed sleeves made from a finely woven fabric. He had on black stockings and gold shoes with pointed toes. Peter could not find a speck of dust nor a trace of dirt anywhere on the boy. The tall boy dismissed Peter at a glance and addressed the lady.
Modron, you were supposed...
Ulfger,
the lady interrupted.
Not today. I do not need this from you today.
You were supposed to be here hours ago, he continued, his voice stern and serious. Have you forgotten your duties?
No, Ulfger,
the lady said with noticeable irritation.
I have not forgotten my duties, and I will not be drawn into this today. Not today.
The fate of Avalon hangs in the balance, yet the council spends its time drinking, gossiping, and exchanging rude riddles.
He stared accusingly at the lady.
They need leadership.
Ulfger, it is not your place to tell me.
It is my place, Modron,
he said, making no attempt to hide the contempt in his voice.
This frivolity and buffoonery, it is why Avalon is dying.
Oh, Ulfger, why must you do this? You're a boy. You should be having fun, running wild, getting into mischief. You...
No! That, Modron, that is the very problem. Avalon needs order and discipline.
He clenched his hand into a fist.
Needs an iron hand to combat mankind's aggression. Without it, we are destined to become extinct.
The lady looked at him sadly.
Those are your mother's words. Even at death's door, she can't keep her long nose out of things. And look what she has done to you, at an age when you should be at your most carefree. You are bent beneath the weight of her nettling and conniving.
Ulfger flushed.
No, that's not true.
The lady shook her head.
This is my fault. I should have stood up to her, should have insisted you live in the forest with your father. Your mother has done everything in her power to kill the wildness within you. I am fearful the Horned One will not know his own son.
Ulfger's eyes fell to the floor. He turned away, but not before Peter caught the wounded look on his face. The lady took Peter's hand. They pushed past the handsome boy and strolled down the hall. They passed beneath another arch and entered a great domed hall. A small circular pond lay at the center of the hall, cut into the stone floor. The pond glowed brightly, the very water was phosphorescent, filling the whole hall with a soft greenish glow. A crescent moon, stars, and winged fish were carved into the dome. The light swirled over the designs, making them appear to swim around the ceiling. A dozen curved tables circled the pond. Plates and bowls of wild game, bread, boiled carrots, beets, and potatoes littered the pitted, well-worn surface, their spice filling the chamber. Peter inhaled deeply, and his stomach grumbled.
I believe someone's hungry, the lady said.
Peter grinned up at her and nodded. A man set down his goblet, pushed back his chair, and propped a cloven hoof on the edge of the table. He wore no clothing, only a thick leather yoke with large brass bells. His small boyish body appeared to be that of a shaggy goat from the waist down. His skin was blood red, his hair black. A long pointed goatee curled upward off his chin, and two short horns poked up from his sloping forehead, each with a small gold bell jangling from its tip.
You're late, he growled.
And a good end of day to you too, Hissy, the lady said,
a smile pushing one corner of her mouth. Nice to see everyone waited. A boar with long, curving tusks, dressed in a brilliant crushed velvet tunic, complete with ruffles, held up a drumstick.
Like one swine waits for another, he said through a mouthful of food, then snorted.
There were at least 40 folk in attendance, mostly elves, their thin, spindly bodies draped across their high-backed chairs, their movements and gestures elegant and graceful. There were many other strange beings that Peter had never seen or imagined. Four plump men, easily as wide as they were tall, and not a one larger than a chicken, with big red noses and cheeks and tiny black eyes that looked like they'd been pushed into their faces, sat upon tall stools wearing outlandish feathered caps and passing a large jug of wine back and forth. A flock of winged fairies sat cross-legged on the tabletop, sharing a bowl of fruit. These were different than the ones Peter had seen in the forest. Foremost, they were clothed, wearing breeches and jackets or wispy gowns, and were well-mannered as they ate from tiny plates and sipped from tiny cups. There were various other impish creatures, some more beast than manlike. Peter noticed two elven women, one with skin as black as coal, the other pink as roses. They lay coiled in each other's arms, their eyes closed as they kissed and licked each other's mouths, their hands lost beneath each other's dresses. A child, an infant really, with a single red horn jutting from its forehead, puffed away on a pipe, his eyes heavy as though lost in a dream. There were at least three fairy folk passed out on the floor, one of them snoring loud enough to be heard even over the ruckus. Sour-faced servants moved in and out of the chamber, carrying trays, pouring wine into goblets, and complaining loudly to each other, all at the same time. Over in one corner, four stout fairy folk with bristly beards that fell all the way to their knees were playing flutes and plucking at string instruments, creating a whimsical melody. Several servants came in and hastily laid out a table setting before an elegant, high-backed chair. The chair was by far the tallest in the room, formed of delicate white roots and branches. It appeared to have grown straight from the floor, its limbs reaching upward, weaving together into a symmetrical arch that nearly touched the top of the dome. The uppermost limbs sprouted into an umbrella of draping leaves. Tiny sprites played in the leaves, their multicolored lights blinking on and off. The lady leaned over to Peter.
Wait here with Drail.
She strolled to the chair. The band stopped playing and most of the attendees rose as she was seated. The lady smiled and inclined her head. The dinner guests dropped back into their chairs, returning to their food and conversation as though nothing had happened. Hissy, the red-skinned man, sat on the lady's left. He leaned over.
M'lady, Tangnost has asked to speak.
The lady let out a sigh.
Can I not at least eat first?
He's just returned from the lands of mankind. If he doesn't get to speak soon, I fear he will simply burst.
Oh dear, I wouldn't wish our beloved Tangnost to burst, not here in my chamber anyway. I guess we have little choice but to let him say his bit.
Hissy stood and banged his fork against his goblet. Most everyone ignored him.
Tonight, Council, he said, a dear old friend has graced us with his pungency. I've composed a rhyme in honor of this most unnotable occasion. Shall I?
Several heads shook in dire disapproval, but the lady smiled.
Why, yes, dear Hissy. By all means, proceed.
Hissy smiled, flicked his eyebrows, then cleared his throat.
I bestow a special troll, one who is dear to heart when he is apart, and hard to bear when he is near. But his lack of charm does no harm. Yes, the harbinger of doom and gloom is back in the room.
He inclined his head across the table to a tall figure cloaked in long, tattered gray robes.
back from his daring jaunt across the lands of mankind, I give you no other than Tangnost.
The troll, who didn't look as though he appreciated his introduction in the least, stood up to a spattering of weak applause. He appeared more beast than man, much taller than the elves, taller even than any man Peter had ever seen. He was stooped and appeared ancient, but not frail, solidly built like a stag. His legs were those of a great woolly elk, while his upper body resembled that of a man. A mane of sand-colored hair rolled down his shoulders in thick tangles, framing a long, goat-like snout. Golden, intelligent eyes peered out from beneath thick, drooping brows. Broad horns curled outward from the sides of his head, and thick tusks jutted from his mouth. Under most circumstances, such an imposing beast would have frightened Peter. But something in this creature's bearing spoke of graciousness, even refinement. The troll bowed to the lady, cleared his throat.
"I am at your service," he said in a deep baritone. "It is truly an honor to attend the ever-fair Lady Modron, daughter of Avalok, great Lady of the Lakes, goddess of..."
"Yes, yes, don't you start with all that silliness," the lady said, waving her hand as though shooing a fly. "You'll not flatter me. You want something or you'd not be here, my dear Tangnost. Something besides the feasting, which I see you've done your share." The troll dropped a guilty glance at the 5 dirty plates stacked before him. "What ill tidings do you bring today?" she asked. "Go on, spill the beans. Get it over with." Tangnost inclined his head.
"Lady, you mustn't slay the messenger."
"A very wise old saying indeed," Hissy interjected. "Unless, of course, that messenger so happens to be a minder, meddler, and manipulator of other people's business."
This brought plenty of snickers from around the tables. Tangnost gave the lady a long-suffering look.
"Modron, if I may be so bold, how did the visit with your father go today?"
The table fell quiet, and all eyes turned to the lady. The lady's face clouded. Tangnost let out a regretful sigh.
"I see."
Somber murmurings hummed around the tables, and several folk began to speak at once.
"Why has Avalok abandoned us?"
the boar called out, his words slurred.
"Why now, when we need him most?"
"Why does he not hear us?" an elf demanded.
"He is dead,"
shouted a smallish gray man with donkey ears.
"No, not dead. Avalok cannot die, you ass. He is just gone."
"We're lost without his hand,"
someone cried from under the table.
"We've angered him,"
added a peevish green man with leaves for hair.
"We must placate him."
"A living sacrifice,"
a rosy-cheeked lady cried out. The plump folk all raised their mugs and cheered at that.
"Blood, blood, blood."
"Avalok is gone,"
the lady spoke, her voice commanding, not loud, yet somehow rising above the ruckus. She came to her feet, eyes gleaming, her shadow growing tall, darkening the room. She looked both beautiful and dangerous, and for a moment, Peter was afraid. The room fell quiet. "It is time we all accept that." She looked from face to face, daring any to challenge her. "We are his children, but do we wish to be children forever? It is time we face our trials on our own." No one spoke for a long minute.
"Aye,"
the boar said, setting a hand on the table to steady himself.
"That's very stoic and all, my lady.
But where does that leave us? I mean, really, what are we supposed to do with that?"
"It means it's time to stop waiting for Avalok to save you," called a boy's voice. All eyes turned to find Ulfgar standing in the doorway. He walked in and stood next to the lady.
It's time to end the decadence and debauchery. To think about something other than wine and lust and song. It is time for Avalon to embrace order and discipline, or die.
The boar dismissed him with a wave of his hand.
With all due respect, Lord Ulfgar,
the boar let out a short burp,
I'd rather not be preached to by a boy.
Maybe it would do you some good to give him a listen, the troll said.
Those are not even his words,
the boar stammered as he refilled his goblet.
We all know he's merely a mouthpiece for his mother. Mother. His mother.
Ulfgar stiffened and the lady set a hand on his shoulder.
And where is your father, Lord Ulfgar?
The boar growled.
Where is the mighty horned one? Why does he not come and talk with us?
That is not his way, Tangnost said. You know that well enough.
I know he's not here, the boar said. Just what does it take to bring him out of his deep, dark forest cave?
This was met with expectant nods and lively quibbling, and again the chamber disintegrated into bickering. The lady's shoulders slumped and she sat back into her chair. Her eyes drifted away as though she were somewhere else. She looked very sad to Peter, and he wanted to go to her, wanted to do whatever he could to cheer her up. Then her eyes found him, and she smiled. She came to her feet.
Today I was sent a gift.
The room quieted as one by one the occupants looked her way.
Maybe it came from Avalok, maybe it sprouted from a cabbage. Either way, a most wonderful delight.
She pointed to Peter. All heads turned to Peter. He blushed and slid behind Drayle.
This boy fell into the clutches of Green Teeth herself, she said. Did he wait for Avalok to save him? No, not him. This brave child single-handedly burned out the witch's eye and escaped from her very lair.
An astonished gasp came from every attendee at the table. Several stood to get a better view of Peter.
Lord Ulfgar is right. We can no longer afford to wait for Avalok. Like this boy, we need to save ourselves. We need to take all the wonderful gifts that Avalok has bestowed upon us and make good use of them. Peter, the lady called, don't be bashful. Come here and sit beside me.
The old elf nudged Peter, and Peter dashed over to the lady's chair. The lady pulled him into her lap.
Where did he come from?
The boar asked.
From the lands of mankind, the lady said. Through the stones.
Hissy poked one of Peter's feet.
What is he?
A human boy, I think, the lady said. But look.
She flipped back his hair, exposing the pointed tips of his ears.
He seems to have some fairy in him as well.
They all leaned forward.
Modron, Ulfgar said. What does he have to do with...
Tangnost? The lady asked. How can such come to be?
Most curious, Tangnost said. I've never seen the like. Have you?
The lady shook her head.
I didn't know it was possible.
Does he not remember his parents?
Not his father, the lady said. His mother was human. It was she that left him to die in the forest.
Mankind are such cruel beasts,
the boar huffed.
So, the fairy in him comes from his father,
Tangnost remarked absently and stroked his hairy chin.
Modron,
Ulfgar said.
This is exactly why nothing ever gets done. We need to discuss...
Maybe one of the satyrs,
the boar suggested, and everyone looked to the red-skinned, horned man.
Hissy grinned.
Well, I've certainly fucked my way through every young maiden I could catch. But to my knowledge, all I've ever left behind in those sullied maidens was the flush of orgasmic delights.
An old fairy lady with drooping wings and powdered cleavage nudged the boar.
If the satyr seed could sprout, why, we'd have a couple million pointy-eared mongrels running about.
Aye.
She winked at Hissy and let loose a cackle.
He can travel between the worlds? The troll asked.
The lady cut the troll a suspicious look. Tangnost, don't start your scheming. I'll not have you using this boy toward your ends. Tangnost looked taken aback.
My lady, I would never dream such.
The lady laughed. Of course not, and Hissy would never diddle a virgin. This drew several snickers.
Besides, the lady said, you cannot have him. He has told me he wishes nothing more than to serve in my guard.
You'd be lucky to have one so brave, said Hissy.
I would. Not only is he stout-hearted, but talented as well, the lady said like a proud mother. Peter, let them hear the forest.
Peter beamed, drinking in all the attention, their curiosity making him bold. He started with the frog's croak, then the chattering of a squirrel, a hooting monkey, then lifted his head and howled, the sound resounding off the dome. He played through a dozen bird calls and ended with a rooster's crow. The hall burst into laughter and applause. If Peter had grinned any wider, his face would have split in two.
Modron, Ulfgar growled.
Please, there are important matters to...
All in good time, Ulfgar, the lady said.